Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm Stephanie Sison, here with Jerome Ostentowski. On today's show, we would like to welcome researcher, educator, consultant, and author of the recent book, The Community Food Forest Handbook, Catherine Bukowski. Many of our listeners know about the Basalt Food Park, where we grow over 100 different edible and medicinal plants that are free and open for anyone to harvest and enjoy. During our first season in 2015, Catherine came to Basalt to tour the site and interview myself and Lisa DiNardo, my cohort in this project. So I'm really excited that this is coming full circle, and now we get to catch back up with Catherine and see what she's been up to over the past 4 years. Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show.
Hi, thanks, Beth. It's so great to reconnect.
Absolutely. So to get us started, can you share with our listeners a little bit about this book and why you were drawn to complete this work?
Well, as you know, since it was 2015, as you said, when I came out to visit you guys, I was, I believe, in the second summer of research at that point. And my background is in agroforestry and permaculture and sustainable agriculture and everything related to that, but mostly I had been international. And when I came back to the U.S. to work on my PhD, the idea of community food forests sort of took me by surprise. I heard about them, started looking into them, and finally decided to make them my dissertation research. But I had no idea really what I was going to find out there. And it was really inspiring. Basalt was actually one of the ones that was super inspiring. It was in the second summer. By that point, I had a chance to see quite a few. And once I started to see what was out there and the lack of information also that was out there and how many sites didn't really know about each other, there was no sort of network. And, you know, at each site, it seemed like people were just trying to figure it out and how to go forward. And so that became sort of the impetus for the book. It was wanting to get this information out there to people so that they could use it and connect over it. And since that time, so the book sort of became my focus of the research at that point, and we pushed to get the book out, and now I'm trying to work to finish up the dissertation on it and get more information into like scientific journals as well, where this topic is actually really taking off.
When I think that, yeah, having a book, you know, as someone who helped start one of these projects, it seemed like there was a little bit of information I could gather and people I could get in touch with, but nothing like what you have put together here and how useful this is, not only for community food forest creation, but really I think it plays into other community projects as well. The focus on these invisible structures and the social side of when you're working in community with community-owned spaces, I think is really has a lot of crossover to other things too.
Yeah, and the idea of you're building social capital, environmental capital, and it really, for any project that someone wants to do, whether it's a farm or a garden, this would be the playbook for them to read, I think. It's so well done and so well written, and you go from one garden to the next, listing all the challenges they have and how they solve those challenges and what players they had to connect with and stakeholders and how they built on, usually it took a couple of years. And, you know, you did a really good job with Stephanie's food forest in Basalt, just going through all of the process that she had to go through. And then that was only the beginning. She's actually gone through a lot more after that. But it's a successful garden now. It's really feeling like it's maturing, and it's just a good model. I think I'm really glad that she stepped out of crimpy and went down and did that.
Not everybody can take that road up to crimpy, so we got to be able to bring them a little teaser down on the floor of the valley.
Exactly.
go ahead.
I was just going to say that's a great part of that network that you guys have there, that you have Crimpy and then you have Basalt, and there's like definite synergy between the two. I was so glad I visited both when I was there.
Absolutely. So for our listeners maybe who don't know the basic of what a community food forest even is. From your description, what would you call the elevator speech of a community food forest? What the heck is that?
I thought the same thing when I first heard about it. I've come to define them as places where people collaboratively come together to grow food in a system that mimics a forest ecosystem. And I always try to explain to people that the forest ecosystem part is really focused more on the relationships between the different elements and the plants rather than, you know, height necessarily or that it's a huge expansive space. So it's really trying to model having plants have their different niches grown together and creating relationships between them so that they're supporting each other and hopefully reducing the needs for external irrigation or fertilization and giving us a wide array of products throughout the year. And they're definitely human ecosystems as well. And we are part of nature, and that's totally embedded in these type of systems. People are coming together to steward a space, and it's open harvest typically for the community. Those were the ones that I focused on. And so really transformative spaces beyond just producing food.
And so you use the word open harvest. I think this is something that's been confusing for folks that I've talked to in understanding the difference between a community garden, which I actually usually call a member garden instead, because it's a little bit different than what when I think of community. And so people are sometimes confused as to what a community food forest is in difference to a community garden. Did you find that in the other forests that you visited or in any of your work?
Definitely, definitely. And I think that there are some that combine elements of both where they might have, you know, allotment or, as you're saying, you know, the part of the garden where each person gets their individual growing space. Sometimes adjacent to or integrated into a food forest where the idea is that everybody takes care of that one unified space together, and whoever is passing by or happens to be visiting is invited to forage or look for things to harvest from that space. And so it's something that I think we're still navigating as a society, because we're not really used to just being able to forage or harvest from public space. Or if we see a particular group of people working on that space, we may not feel invited in to just go ahead and pick what we want. The idea of free food in our parks in public places is, you know, the whole idea of the commons has sort of been lost in that sense. So that is definitely a new idea, and I think places that are doing both at the same time need a lot of signage and help people kind of understand those differences. Something that people are definitely still grappling with.
You know, there's also that healing aspect of food forests. Time magazine just came out with an entire issue on mindfulness, and there's an article about the healing powers of nature. And in Japan, they do this technique called forest bathing, and there's research being done on, you know, the compounds called phytoncides that you inhale when you go through a mature forest. But it actually happens in parks and other, you know, landscapes that are somewhat mature. And the fact that there are these studies where they put people out into parks out of the office building, and just for 20 or 30 minutes, they come back and they're rejuvenated. They do better during their work, they're focused, they're more concentrated. And it's a very Zen, the whole idea of having a perennial garden as opposed to an annual garden. It's a very Zen, it follows some of the Zen concepts of no death and no birth, because when you have a perennial garden, you really don't have to plant it again, as opposed to an annual garden where you take everything off, there's bare soil, you have to start all over again. And that feeling of going in there and really not having to do much but tweak it out here, chop and drop, prune a little bit, throw some mulch on there, and then wait for the fruits to come the next year, that's a very healing. And just the fact that you go in and eat, a kid's going out into a forest garden and eating berries, they go crazy. They love it. Or they go climb up a tree, and it's a very healing whole atmosphere, and that's one of the things I'm just, and it's also the interdependence of the trees and the shrubs and how they cooperate and make a whole systems approach to gardening, which is also another concept that we don't know much about in the West. Do you want to expand about that? And you talk about that in the book a bit.
Yeah, sure. Now, I'm a big proponent of the healing aspect of the food forests for exactly all the reasons you were just saying. And I mean, there's studies out now being done in Europe about how working with food forests as they're being developed can change the perspective of students as they're learning about the different relationships between insects and the flowers and the fruiting plants, and even how they're interacting with that space and nurturing, you know, this type of habitat. And it really expands their view beyond what's being taught in the curriculum. So really powerful educational spaces for those type of like holistic systems. And
it's like it's a living laboratory, isn't it?
It's totally a living laboratory. Yeah. And you're right, when it's perennial, you know, you aren't just focusing on that cycle of, okay, we're putting the bed to sleep for the winter and preparing it for the next year. And there is something about that cycle as well, and then prepping it again in the spring. You still have part of that cycle again that, you know, is kind of embedded in annual plants. But in perennials, I think that there's this added benefit of being able to see how things change over time and how some, you know, there's just been comments said to me during these interviews of like, you know, you might make some changes and tweaks this year and you don't even really realize what's fully happening until the next year, and you see like what that has produced. And it helps people, I think, start to see things in a little bit longer term and connect with nature on this like more extended level of what we do today has effects that will shape how that space looks within the coming years. And that's true for so many other things. And it's really in our group meeting that we had in Basalt too. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed talking with you guys, and there was so much synergy within your group. And we were one of the first groups that really hit on being able to say, you know, there's this spiritual aspect to this. And it was Lisa who had even mentioned, like, you know, when people are working in that space and you know that you're creating a space that is not just producing food for your family and potentially your household, but you're doing it for the greater good. Like, what is your heart resonating with? You know, why are you there working? What is drawing you to that? And you know that I think it's because people know that they're healing the ground, they're healing the land, and they're trying to heal community. So they're really healing spaces on an individual level, on a community level, on an earth level. And yeah, very powerful.
I know Stephanie's bringing students in there. Several times a year, I have CMC classes that have permaculture programs already from Steamboat and from Aspen and Glenwood, and they use my food forest and my forest garden greenhouses as a living laboratory, and they just sort of take it over. I do a little teaching, but they use it. They have their own curriculum, so they can wander in the guilds and take notes, see a mature food forest, and that's going to happen, and it's already happening in the Basalt food forest, and it's down valley, so I think it's really a good opportunity. And this is happening. I was just up at Whitefish where we built a greenhouse, and they're putting in a food forest at the high school there. We did a workshop a couple weeks ago, and I'll be going back there to help them install a food forest. They have a huge outdoor annual garden as well, and they're doing agroforestry in the campus, adding some new trees and stuff to sort of include the mining and the timber industry there.
And Catherine, you mentioned something there that I want to hit on. We have worked since the creation of the Basalt Garden with the Rifle Corrections Facility prison folks, and they've been coming maybe 5-6 times a year every year, and many of those gentlemen have since been released and have come back. And there's something about when some of the new guys come and we explain, you know, they just think they're coming to just do some work on some project, and they don't usually have an idea of what it is to begin with. And when they get an explanation of the site and that we're doing all of this work and planting all of these trees and mulching all of these beds, so that anyone in the community can come and spend time there or eat from there. It really starts to open up their mind as to how different systems care for people maybe who don't have access to these kinds of things, or that their input in it, their labor into it, is not for the town of Basalt. It's not for some nonprofit organization specifically, that it's for anybody who walks by that wants to eat a raspberry, and they get to see the longevity of it, where some of these guys were in for 3 years with me, and they're some of the ones who planted the first nectarine tree, and now they get to come back and see the fruit of that and see kids come through and eat the raspberries and things like that. So it's really beautiful to witness what that means to different folks. And it's more than the plants. It's more than a park where you run your dog. It's something else that elicits this feeling of the community caring.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a great description of it. It is this, you know, example, and even the notion, the idea of a few people caring for a greater good for the masses, you know, doing this work, not knowing exactly what will come back at first, but going forward with it because of the positive benefits, and just being able to see something that you planted in that public space that you nurtured, and that particular plant now has the ability to nurture you and many others. And that's a powerful connection with that piece of nature. And then I think it makes people look at the rest of nature around them very differently and just stop seeing everything as a passive landscape, because they've had the opportunity to shape something and have a part in it.
For sure. And so I'm going to jump in there real quick. Thank you for tuning into Katie and Kay. This is a Living Permaculture show. We are talking with Catherine Bukowski, author of the Community Food Forest Handbook. So we're back in there. So I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the other work that you're doing right now, and where are you located, and what are you up to these days now that this book has been published?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was in Virginia, and I just recently in the last month or so moved to Bethesda, Maryland. So I'm right in the DC area now. And I'm focusing on trying to get all of this work into journal articles and wrap up my dissertation with Virginia Tech on this work. It was my advisor, John Mincel, who actually co-authored the book with me. And that was fantastic because he had a lot of insights too, especially working with like professionals and agencies. And we kind of came at this from sort of an extension viewpoint. Virginia Tech is a land grant institution, and so it has a pretty big cooperative extension network that helps disseminate university research into a format that people can use for practical reasons on the ground. And so that's kind of, hopefully that comes through in the book as well. That's sort of the approach that we took for it. So now we're trying to get the research out there, which is a little bit more specific and has a lot to do with the community capitals, but also breaking down everything I saw in as patterns across the food forest into letting people know what elements they should really think about including in food forest design, such as, for example, with basalt, having the seed saving library and having that section of the food forest, what would that be connected to for the type of benefits and outcomes to have a multifunctional green space within a community? And so some of the research and stuff that I'm trying to produce right now is focused on, here are the different elements I saw in food forest design, and this is what they support is community benefits and outcomes, so that once that information is out there, it can really be used to plan these spaces as multifunctional green spaces, which is really needed in our urban landscapes right now. So that's a big focus for me. I'm also working on, you know, promoting the book and getting it out there, trying to get out to conferences. And I've recently started a collective consulting business with a couple of friends of mine who we all have diversified backgrounds, but at the same time are really connected over this whole idea of being able to heal the land and work with people and work with land in a way that provides for not just human needs, but other, like protecting natural resources, the needs of wildlife, the needs of water, really holistic, designing holistic systems and bringing in community and the social aspects of it as well. So that's something that we're just getting going, and we're looking at a project right now in North Carolina that was a large tract of land that was previously pretty extensively logged and left in damaged condition. Mm-hmm. And we're working with an organization right now to see how we can help integrate educational resources and healing that land and creating a space that down the road can really serve the communities that the timber industry once did, but in more sustainable and holistic ways. So working on sort of projects like that, and we're definitely looking to work with people on the projects that they might need help with, whether that's brainstorming or helping to actually come up with design plans for landscapes, and community facilitation, bringing people together to even discuss these topics at a deeper level. So that's some of the stuff I've been working on, and just doing a lot of work networking with organizations as well, like the National Agroforestry Center and agroforestry working groups throughout the country that are looking to expand the type of practices that are supported. For those that don't know what agroforestry is, it's integrating trees into agriculture, whether that's crops or domestic livestock, agricultural systems. And in our country, that's really specifically looked at a few different practices in the past, such as like windbreaks or alley cropping. And now we're looking at how we can integrate edible species into riparian buffers, and how can we bring it into the urban landscape and potentially design systems that are more fire resistant. So kind of diversified work right now. Yeah. What I've been doing.
You were just in Indonesia, right? Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing over there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I did get to go to Indonesia, and that was just personal fun. But whenever I go anywhere in the tropics, I'm still so drawn to those type of systems that's where I originally started my work with, understanding forest ecosystems. And my work started out with how to understand forest ecosystems to return ecosystem functions to degraded land that had been used for agriculture. And a lot of that work was in Latin America, but it still draws me to look at those systems whenever I'm traveling. So in Indonesia, I had the opportunity to see quite a few different agroforestry type systems that were focused around producing clove and a lot of the spices that come from Indonesia, and a lot of flower essences, as well as like papaya and coconut and some of the main fruit that are used in those dishes, and really, really cool systems over there and how they integrate the spiritual aspects of Hinduism and Balinese Hinduism. And it was really interesting as well, creating like sacred spaces within each of those different plots and areas, and just a very different outlook in how all those systems fit together. And also how dangerous it is to actually harvest clove. So anytime people are using those type of spices, really appreciate where they might be coming from.
Well, and what beautiful work. There's so much land that is so degraded. I mean, in other countries, but here as well. I think if anyone's been in the San Luis Valley anytime recently, the huge amount of acreage that's been that's just so salty now from improper irrigation and this kind of churn and burn broad scale agriculture, that this land just looks like a moonscape, some of it. And what are we going to do? We just can't keep abusing land and then moving to another piece. Eventually we're going to run out of pieces to move to. So this work in how do we then rehabilitate this land that's been so abused is a really important part of agriculture, I think.
Well, plus a lot of the land, like I was in Montana, a lot of the land is degraded by GMOs, and mm-hmm. all over the Midwest. And how do we go back and repair that land with alley cropping and agroforestry and silvicult pasture? And one of our participants in our workshop had 400 acres that they're turning into organics, but the information out there about how to go about it is just not there in some of these rural areas, like in Montana. You know, the extension people are just not up to speed on how to convert some of these, even a 20-acre parcel. So we have some opportunities to step in there and come up with a design We did a one-day charrette on two 20-acre parcels, and then we might be going back to do a charrette on the 400-acre parcel. Coming up with ideas. What are you going to put it there? Silviculture, free-range chickens, organic garlic, organic wheat, no-till with black medic and wheat. These are all things that are possible. And then, you know, integrate a Airbnb into the system so people can come out onto these farms and experience this regeneration, rehealing of this agricultural land the soil is polluted with herbicides, and you really have to spend some time regenerating it.
Right. We can't just forget about it. Let's fix it up.
Yeah.
Maybe that's your next book,
definitely.
Catherine.
Yeah, I'd like you to get in. I'd like you to get involved in the team that we're working with there as well. So we'll be in touch about that.
Well, yeah, definitely let me know. I've added a consulting page to my website now at communityfoodforest.com for Kindred Roots. That's the collaborative consulting organization that we started. And our idea even behind the consulting is that everything needs to be a collaborative effort in order to help heal this world that we're currently inhabiting and that we want to be inhabiting in the future. So, you know, there's a core group of us, but just as I talk about the social system in the book, really the idea behind this is that through our expertise, one of us has worked with rural communities, one of us has worked internationally, one of us has worked with refugees. We have this like very extended network of experts that we can call in to these projects. And it's just work that's really needed right now because it's, you know, it's great to have these design ideas, but we really need to work with people's mindsets too, because that is what's going to ultimately end up shaping a project, and its success and its longevity as well. So, you know, that's really where we're coming from to work at both aspects, like designing that piece of property for regeneration. And I mean, Jerome, I know you'd agree with this, and Stephanie, I feel like the soil is just such an important aspect. And sometimes you need to just focus on rehabilitating the soil and that space first before you can even start designing or planting on it. And during that time, that's a great time to be working with people and prepping a certain perspective and mindset to take on that project.
For sure. Anytime I talk about the food forests at different workshops and lectures, we always talk about how the plants are actually the easy part. The soil, like we know what to do to make these things better. It's the social structure that is a little bit more challenging or continuous. But I do have to, of course, we are running out of time as always. So I'm going to wrap it up here. Can you once more give your contact information, Catherine?
Sure. Yep. It's communityfoodforest.com. And there is a contact me section on the website. There's a page for the consulting. There's a page for the handbook, the book. So there's a lot of different resources. There's also a resource page, and people can contact me through there.
Great. Thank you. And I'll leave our listeners with a quote from Grace Lee Boggs. We can begin by doing small things at the local level, like planting community gardens or looking out for our neighbors. That is how change takes place in living systems, not from above, but from within, from many local actions occurring simultaneously. So let's get out there and work together in our communities, this one here in the Roaring Fork Valley and across the world. Thanks for tuning in to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We'll see you next month.